She was a dispatcher. While she was working, an officer was killed in the line of duty. That proved to be one of many that caused her PTSD. Welcome to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. In the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, we are joined by special guests talking about their experiences, their realities of investigating crimes, plus those that have experienced horrendous trauma. Police, first responders, military, and victims of crime share their stories. Hi, I'm John J. Wiley. In addition to being a broadcaster, I'm also a retired police sergeant. Be sure to check out our website, letradio.com, and also like us on Facebook. Search for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. If you want to be a guest on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, simply contact us. It couldn't be easier. You can send us a message on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show page or email jay@letradio.com. That's jay@letradio.com. Joining us from California, we have Deborah Green on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Deborah is a retired police dispatcher, worked for two agencies. She was diagnosed with PTSD, which we will talk about in a few moments. Her best way to get all of her details, everything she does, is go to her Linktree. Linktree.com/D911Green. That's Linktree.com/D911Green. Deborah, thanks for being a guest on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, and thanks for your service. Both very much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
And this is a topic that doesn't get talked about a lot, and for anybody, any walk of life, but dispatchers in particular are a very underrepresented segment of the population on the show. And I did dispatching for a very short period of time in my career. And I just say this, being on the phone or being on the radio with an officer in trouble is something I would have a difficult time with. As a matter of fact, I don't watch videos now, but when I do, I wind up screaming at them, don't go in there, stop! You know, it's a powerless feeling. So I'm sure it's very difficult for you to talk about these things.
It was at one time. It's getting easier as I've been away from the job. But yeah, listening to someone yelling, shots fired, and not being able to do a gosh darn thing about it except get them more help is very difficult.
And I never really fully understood how often the dispatchers save my bacon, for pun intended, very much so, that they would give information. And sometimes it was a love-hate relationship because they were constantly telling you things to do. And sometimes you just want, I don't know about other agencies, but we started as soon as we got our car. We'd have three or four calls backed up, and the dispatcher would be like, are you busy? You got something going on? And, oh, here we go. What's the decomposing body? Whatever it is, it's a bad call.
But, you know, you got to figure, you guys on the street go from, you maybe have 10 calls, maybe at the most 20 calls a night, and multiply that by 5 for us. So where you guys maybe spend that time with that person on the street and getting the information and calming the situation down, or, you know, arresting somebody, taking them to jail, as soon as we hang up that call, we're on to the next one. So it's so much, I'm not going to compare our traumas or our stress levels, but it can be a little more stressful at times for us.
I can see that, because there's no end. Once you start, it's nonstop. It's call after call after call.
Absolutely. And you don't get that stop until your relief gets there and plugs in and takes over for you, and then they start.
Yeah. And the thing I was getting at is we had certain dispatchers that were injured police. One in particular, long story short, we had a thing when I was a rookie. We were taught if you had to go downtown a midnight shift, call them and see if they need anything. And they needed coffee because they were locked down and they couldn't get out. I'm like, okay, I'll get coffee. And long story short, I walked up to deliver coffee and I got to get buzzed into the dispatch area. I did. And the dispatcher went, can I help you? I went, yeah, I'm 635 car. Here's coffee. And they looked at me slack-jawed. I'm like, what's the matter? And they were like, you don't look nothing like we thought you did. We always thought you were black. We always thought you sounded like Barry White. And it turns out you're very white. And from that day on, I was known as Very. Every time he called me with a bad call, he'd say, Very, hey, how you doing? What is it? What? I know it's a bad one.
Oh yeah, we had all sorts of nicknames for our guys. I had one deputy that we nicknamed Eeyore because, you know, the oh poo, it'll never work.
Yeah.
And he was just that kind of tone all the time, and then when he sounded normal, there was a problem.
And it's funny, and I want to get into your story a little bit, but one of the things that amazed me is I grew up watching the Clint Eastwood movies. I grew up watching the Joseph Wambaugh movies about police. And, you know, they always had these witty, smart-alecky comebacks after bad situations, and they knocked down a whiskey or two, and they were fine. And that's not the way that things were. When I'd see or hear audio playbacks, we didn't have video cameras back in the day. When I'd hear the audio playbacks, we would say things. We would have voices. We'd have sounds come out of our mouths that didn't sound cool at all. Was that the experience for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you just, I don't know how to, you know, it just, you know, every once in a while you get somebody in, and then the transmission that they didn't mean to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
The oops. But yeah, learned, all the time.
We learned early on, for example, when you have a foot chase, one of the things you didn't do is you didn't give out a whole lot of information on the radio because no one could understand you. You just give directions, and that was about it. And you wind up getting really winded. One of the things that happened is when I get really excited and I get really, really emotionally spun up, you can tell in my voice right away. And you could even tell when the dispatchers, when they got used to you, they would know by the tone of your voice whether you're okay if you asked for backup or not. They would start sending it. They could tell right away that you weren't right.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one thing, being a dispatcher, is that you learn to determine, diagnose a problem by the tone of people's voices, not only on the radio and with patrol, but even on the phone, talking to the general public, you can kind of determine what level of anxiety or stress level that they're at because of where they're at on the tone scale.
How would you describe the stress level for you as a dispatcher for the two agencies you work for 28 years?
Well, you're taught to be almost robotic, kind of monotone, because what your job is as a dispatcher is to keep the person on the other end of the radio or the other end of the phone, keep them calm and get them the information. But once you're off that radio, once your foot comes off the foot pedal, then you can break down, then you can be excited or upset or whatever, but keeping that level of composure is essential because you're the one trying to get them help.
I have a cousin now who's a dispatcher, I believe it's in North Carolina, and she has been for a few years now. And every now and then we talk, and she starts letting me know that, wow, this is a lot more stressful and physically demanding than she ever realized. People think, when I get stressed out, I don't mean I'm a little spun up. When I get stressed out, I am physically exhausted. It's a physical thing as much as it is mental. We're talking with Deborah Green. She's a retired police dispatcher for two agencies, contacts from California, and she was diagnosed with PTSD, which we'll talk about in a few moments. And the best way to get information about her is Linktree. Linktree.com/D911Green. This is the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. We're going to take a short break. I promise you, we'll be right back. One of the questions I get all the time is, how can I show my support for law enforcement? We're all busy. We've got busy lives, but there's something oh so simple you can do with our Facebook page. Search for Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page. And when you see a post you agree with that resonates with you, share it, especially episodes of the podcast. To do all that, just search for us on Facebook. Look for Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and be sure to click like. Return our conversation with Deborah Green, retired dispatcher, diagnosed with PTSD. And she was a dispatcher for 28 years for two law enforcement agencies. She's now retired. Best place to get more information about her is online, Linktree, linktree.com/D911Green. That's D911Green. There you'll find links to all of her social medias as well. Now, I apologize in advance if I didn't get the linktree.com correct. They do some different spelling, but you'll find it. Deborah, you were retired what year?
I retired June of 2021.
And there was an incident at dispatching where an officer was killed in line of duty. Are you able to talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. October 23rd, 2019, we sent some units out to a marijuana grow that there were some suspicious subjects in. When they got there, they were ambushed, shot at. All we heard initially on the radio was shots, the announcement of shots fired and hearing the gunshots. We tried to get the one deputy on the radio, and myself, I was a military police officer at the beginning of my career back in 86 to 92, and so knowing that, you know, there may be a situation that he was in that he couldn't use his voice, we asked him to, you know, just click the radio. If you're able to, click the radio just so that we know he was okay. And there was nothing back. And, you know, the feeling of helplessness trying to get him all the help that we could get. And during this incident, the deputies on scene told us that he had been put, the one deputy had been put into an ambulance and sent to the hospital. So at that time, while you're dispatching, you kind of put that in the back of your mind and say, okay, he's in an ambulance, he will be fine. And you continue on with the job that needs to be done, keeping those guys safe out there until the suspects are arrested. And because there was still live fire going on, there was still a shootout and whatnot. And so this event lasted for about 3 hours where we had other agencies coming in to help. We had air support by Highway Patrol. And I stayed on the radio until the second suspect was arrested. And then by that time, things are happening behind the scenes that we had day shift come in early. So at 4:30 in the morning, I was released from the radio so that I could start with the peer support stuff. But yeah, that was a very traumatic evening and one that I will definitely never forget.
3 hours is a very long time. Most of these things are over with in seconds, 15, 20 seconds. And that can seem like an eternity. To be in a firefight for 3 hours, I can't even begin to imagine that.
Well, it wasn't actually a firefight for 3 hours, but that initial, it maybe 15, 20 minutes when they got there.
That's still an eternity. I mean, for someone on a scene, it's a lifetime. For a dispatcher, and I can't begin to imagine, Deborah, being on the other end of the radio. It must have seemed like it was 2-3 hours to begin with.
Yes, it did. You know, because you're not getting the updates as you would in a safe situation, because them just talking could put them in danger, just from the sounds, because where it was located was a very rural area of the county. So it was taking a long time for the back. There were four officers there to begin with, but it was taking 15, 20 minutes for people just to get there from other parts of the county. So, you know, it was a very long time And, you know, just the silence in between my transmissions was, I don't know, what would you call it, deafening?
Yeah.
you know, just the anxiety that was building up. Are they okay? Is everything fine? You know, just there was a lot going on. And luckily I had a crew working in dispatch that did all the background work that needed to be done and allowed me to focus completely on what was going on out in the field.
One of the things that happened to me, Deborah, during really bad shooting situations is what people call auditory exclusion. And the best way I can describe it, and I get tunnel vision, and things would slow down, time would slow down, you could see things and really focus on the threat at hand. But, for example, one of the last shootings I was in, I had another sergeant sitting next to me in a patrol car, and he was yelling for me not to get out of the car. And the best way I can describe it is I could hear almost like a TV in another room. I couldn't tell you what he said. When you're a dispatcher and you're focusing on sound only, how difficult was that? Was auditory exclusion part of the deal, part of the problem, or did you find another way to get a hold of the scenario?
I don't know if auditory exclusion. I kind of went into my training to just document and get them help and things like that. I later, about 6 months later, I went and read the call, pulled it up and read the call because I was writing a request to nominate someone for an award for that incident. And as I'm reading through, I couldn't remember half of the stuff that I was reading that I did. It was like I did it and then put it aside so that it didn't traumatize me further, if that makes any sense. I just completely forgot what was typed, what happened. It was quite amazing to go back and read it. It really was. And try to remember that I actually did that.
Right. Well, a lot of times people think that you're covering something up if you don't tell. I couldn't remember a lot of things. And specifics like how many shots are fired, I couldn't tell you. I can give you a guess. Until I counted the rounds, I couldn't tell you. What was the status on the officers involved in this call?
There was one officer that was shot and killed. Another officer that was a ride-along, he was an applicant for the department, so he was doing a ride-along. So he was armed, but was working for another department. So he was shot also and was not able to go back to work. Another officer, there were two others there that were not injured, but one of them never came back to work. Another would come back for a little bit, leave, come back for a little bit, leave, until he finally retired just before I did.
All which
so nobody involved in that incident is there now.
All that's understandable, and when we return, we're going to talk more about, some would like to use the phrase, the unseen scars. There are plenty, and I always say if you are in policing for any period of time, you're going to get dinged up. You're going to experience these things, and we're going to talk about how Deborah, as a dispatcher, experienced these things, how she got diagnosed, what the effect was on her family, and more importantly, what she did with her life after. You can find us on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page. This is the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Newsbreak is your number one local news app for current events, free live news for you and your community. Download the Newsbreak app today for free and be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Returning to our conversation with Deborah Green on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Deborah is retired police dispatcher, 28 years dispatching for two different agencies in California. She was diagnosed with PTSD. part of which was caused by the incident she just talked about, where deputies were involved in a firefight. One was shot and killed, others were shot, and it was a tremendous impact on her and the agency as well. Get more details about her online. Go to Linktree, linktree.com/D911Green. That's D911Green. Got to ask you this question, Deborah. You did 28 years as a dispatcher, and I understand the big things. I always say this. I policed back in the day before we had terms like critical incidents or peer support or debriefing. We didn't have any of that stuff. We've gotten much better as an industry with these really big things, but we seem to be really falling short, in my opinion, in my experience, on the everyday grind. And I'm sure the grind for dispatchers was just as bad as those on the street. So the question I've got for you is, when this incident came up where the officer was killed, others were shot, were you okay, or were you experiencing problems from dispatching before that?
Well, you don't get out of this profession without it affecting you. You know, this wasn't my only critical incident. I had had several officer-involved shootings throughout my career. And the first one, there was no peer support. There was no, it was just suck it up, come back tomorrow. You know, because you're a dispatcher, this doesn't affect you. Well, they didn't realize that, you know, I'm in tears crying because it did affect me. I cried on the way home. I cried on the way back to work. It took several months for me to get through that. And it got better each one, but each one we had better acknowledgement of what people were going through. So I had maybe four or five where we had a dispatch was actually invited to at least the tactical debriefings. And our first mental health debriefing wasn't until 2015 when we had a shootout between deputies and a barricaded subject. And we had a therapist in the room and talked to us, but it wasn't where it was in 2019, where as soon as I was off the radio, we had peer support there. They were set up. They pulled everybody from dispatch into a room and talked to us, let us go home and come back for another briefing 2 days later. But after the initial month or so, there was really no follow-up. So we have this type of situation, we're getting better, but we're not there yet.
No, I agree. And again, I've never been in the dispatcher's perspective. So my time dispatching was very, very limited. So I really can't draw a comparison. One of the things that you said that really resonated with me was we had a saying, and they used to tell us when we were young in the police department, suck it up, Buttercup. You're Baltimore police. That's how they talked, police. And you got a job to do. You can lick your wounds later. And that's what the old timers did. And that's what the new guys did. And our idea of debriefing was after particularly bad incidents, we would get a case of beer and go to a parking lot and drink beer and talk. That's what we did. And that was, I think it worked up to a degree, except for some people, alcohol became a problem. But we never had dispatchers there. They were always in another part of the city. How did you guys find a way to get your center back afterwards?
Kind of, you talk about it in the room. I mean, you're stuck in this same room with these people for, you know, 8 to 12 hours, depending on what your shifts are. And so as working in a rural department, we weren't as busy as a metro department, so we had the time to talk to each other and do our own peer support and work through that. Back in 2015, 2016, I started in therapy because of something outside of work, and that helped give me the tools to know that I was having a problem And so after my incident in 2019, I was able to make those appointments for emergency therapy and get in there and talk about it. And had I not been doing that already, I think I would have been a lot worse than I am.
And not to sound judgy when I say this, one of the ways that we got better at what we did, and I think it's human nature, is that we would second-guess ourselves. Is there something I could have done differently that could have affected the outcome? How could I be more efficient, more effective, whatever it might be? And what that led to for many of us, myself included, was survivor's guilt. It was what I call the Superman complex, coulda, shoulda, woulda. And I'm not God. I'm not Superman. All I did was the best I could with the training I had. Was survivor's guilt an issue for you?
Absolutely. The second guessing, did I do everything right? Did I get people there on time? It weighs down on you. Luckily, a friend of mine worked for the DA's office who came in and did the investigation of the shooting, and he pulled me aside 2 days later and said that the first thing that they did was listen to the tapes and that I did nothing wrong. He wanted to make sure that I knew that before the official report came out, because he was concerned because it affected me so much.
Did that help when they said you did nothing wrong? That you did everything the right way? Because a lot of times I'm sitting there thinking to myself, Deborah, when people said it to me, I'm like in one ear and out the other. It felt good, yeah, but I didn't believe it deep down inside.
Yeah, the same. You know, it took a little bit of that weight off of me, but you still second guess everything that you did. You know, did this go correctly? And, you know, I still kind of question myself to this day whether I did everything correctly.
Look, I you're preaching to the choir. I get it. And it took a long time for me to realize I'm not God. I'm not Superman. You know, all I did was the best I could. And sometimes it wasn't all that great, but other times it was stellar. And a lot of people I worked with did some stellar, heroic things as well. We often didn't talk about it. We could talk about the funny things between dispatchers and police that happen all the time, but I want to focus on your story. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't get, and we will talk about in the next segment, are dispatchers, first responders. We'll talk about that in a moment. I promise you that. But I don't think a lot of people really realize that just because the physical danger is not there, that the blood pressure, the adrenaline, all those things that can be negatives still exist for you.
Yes, very much so. Anxiety, depression, I have high blood pressure, I have heart issues, I have diabetes, all of this, you know, the traumas all contributed to my health issues.
And the emotional damage had a negative effect on you and your family as well, I can imagine.
Yes. You know, early retirement is not something that one wants to do. You know, basically being forced into retirement, I was not given a choice. It was determined for me. You know, I wasn't planning on actually retiring until, you know, July of this year. And, you know, having to retire in 2021, there's a lot of emotions that go along with being forced into retirement.
Right. Yeah, that call was made for me, too. It wasn't my choice. It was, part of it was 6 1 half does the other. But I planned to do 25 years and reach a higher rank than I did. And my career is cut short 11 years and 4 months. And I always felt like I didn't go out on my terms. We're talking with Deborah Green, retired police dispatcher, 28 years. Best way to get more details about her is Linktree. Linktree.com/D911Green. When we return, we'll talk more about the PTSD she diagnosed with, the progress she's made, and what she does with her life today. If you want to be a guest on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, simply contact us. It couldn't be easier. You can send us a message on Facebook. Look for and like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show page or email jay@letradio.com. That's jay@letradio.com. Return our conversation with Deborah Green on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Deborah is retired police dispatcher, 28 years dispatching for two different agencies in California. Best way to get information about her is Linktree, linktree.com/D911Green. That's D911Green. I hate to cut to the chase. I don't want to sound like I'm fast forwarding through, but you got diagnosed with PTSD, or as it, you call it CPTSD.
Well,
what is the difference?
There's the two of them. So you have a PTSD from the single incident, but then the complex PTSD, which is acquired over, 28 years of trauma, and then you have the one incident that just ruined your life.
Yeah, and that's the way I put it for me. And my wife, I call her the boss. She fully understands that there's things I have to do. I claim this stuff. And I didn't start it. I didn't cause it, but this is what I got to deal with. And a reason why I say that, Deborah, is there was a period of time when my daughters were very young, and the best way I can describe this as an analogy, I was like an arterial bleed, and I was bleeding all over everybody, but I was focusing on look who caused the injuries instead of let's find a solution, or let's find a way where we can live a better life in spite of.
Right. Yeah. After the incident, 2019, we roll into 2020, we got COVID, you're putting a trauma person into four walls and not letting them leave, not letting them do what they normally would do. And then along comes, I have a supervisor that doesn't know how to deal with trauma. So I was taken into that. So, there was this perfect storm of things that happened, and my poor family just had to deal with me, even though I was going through therapy, you still have my husband just was the target of a lot of anger that I had.
Yeah.
And God bless him, he's still around.
You said anger. That was my biggest, that was the most visual thing that people saw was the anger.
Right.
And I tell people anger is a great tool. It's a normal human emotion, but it's designed to be used to keep threats away. And what happens is it winds up keeping everybody away. And then you're like, well, why is everybody abandoning me? And then you get angry over that. My anger was so irrational. I would go from being, my wife would call them, my ex-wife now, mini vacations, where I would just totally disassociate. It'd say a simple thing to me, and next thing you know, I would be out of control. And they would think, what is wrong with this guy? He's a jerk. Well, no, there was an injured person there. And I'm much, much better today than I was. But they caught the brunt of it. And it wasn't fair. They didn't sign up for that.
No, they don't. I don't know what your kids grow up in it, and it's kind of normal to them. But luckily I had, my kids were older when this happened, and they were, my family was my rock. They understood. We went through like I said, I had been in therapy for a while for another incident. So they knew that I was having issues that way. And, I've learned to, do my boundaries and talk. After I started therapy, my husband and I, we had a better relationship because I was talking again,
mm-hmm.
where I wasn't, for all those years. It's part of the law enforcement thing. When you come home, you don't talk to your family because you're trying to protect them from what you're hearing and seeing. And, it's a tough thing. I really got to hand it to the families of law enforcement that have stuck it through. And are still there for their person.
Part of your conversation reminds me of being a much younger guy in the police academy. And I was turning 22. I went in at 21. And I really didn't know anything. I thought I knew it all back then. But we had a major who seemed like an ancient person at the time. He must have been in his 40s. And he said the average life expectancy of our Baltimore police then was 52. And the average life expectancy for American men was 72. And I'm estimating now, but they say that the average life expectancy for American men is 78, and for police it's 58. And the chief reasons being, mental health, poor physical health, poor eating habits, drinking too much, all those things. And what we didn't talk about was PTSD and how it affected people and how it cut people's lives short and how it really damaged the people that were most important to them. Am I missing anything?
Nope. You nailed it on... You nailed it. That's it exactly. And you know, this year there were more suicides by cops, first responders, right, you know, firefighters and dispatchers and medics than there were actual officers killed in the line of duty or firefighters killed in the line of duty, which says something about the state of our profession.
Yeah, and we think we're making progress. Well, there's two populations. There's the inside the industry, and I love police. I really do. They've got some, what I really can't stand are the so-called tactical experts, and they're like, well, if I was there, I'd have done this. And you weren't there, so shut your pie hole. You're not helping. The other one is everybody outside of it, and they may not understand, and they have high expectations, and that rightfully so, of their police for behavior and all those other things. But what they don't seem to have, and we don't seem to have really well on either side, is an understanding and solutions.
Correct. And that's what I'm trying to work with now that I'm retired, is working with my congressman. There's a couple bills that are going through that I've got to get with him regarding first responders and mental health, and also putting dispatchers as first responders, because at the federal level, the dispatchers are classified as clerks, clerical, or secretaries, according to the federal government, when that's not the case. And as soon as we can be classified at where we need to be as law enforcement or fire professionals rather than secretaries, it's going to start getting better for at least dispatchers. But we also have to look at what are we doing to our cops, and what, you know, the administrations need to be more aware of what's going out on the street with our mental health.
Yeah, because someone's going to pay the bill, and the bill could be really high. And here's part of what's happening, we have so many officers leaving, so many retiring that would stay longer, that we have forced overtime. We have people, and they're not getting a break. And part of the problem I had was, the best explanation I was given, I think it was Joseph Wamba, said, you know, police work is 95% boredom. You go from absolute boredom to sheer adrenaline dumps, and it's a life or death situation. Sometimes that would happen multiple times a shift. And that was the way things were for us. But we have so many officers now that can't even get a break. They can't get 8 hours away from that because they're being forced into overtime. And our, as much as I love them, our admin seems to forget where they came from. They toe the political line of the parties that be. The mayors, the executive branch of the government, they're the ones who call the shots when it comes to policing. And you can argue that point all day long. I'm amazed and surprised at two things. Number one, dispatchers, in my opinion, are very much first responders. What people get hung up is on the responding part. They're the first line of communication. They're the ones who keep the people responding safe, but they pay a price. There's nothing wrong with being a clerk or a clerical or a secretary. There's nothing wrong with that at all, administrative assistant. But our dispatchers deserve more respect than that, and they pay a heavy price. One of the things I'm really amazed at, I'm getting on my soapbox, is that you are working on getting legislation to get that changed in your state.
Well, California already, California is working, has already declared dispatchers as first responders. It's the federal level that I'm trying to get a hold of my congressman to work with. But the political climate in Washington, and I'm not getting into politics, but it's not allowing that process to happen at this time. So the more people we can get to contact and get that changed, the better.
What's the best way people can get in touch with you and find out and keep up with what you're doing?
The Linktree. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Twitter. And, you know, if anybody just needs an ear, I'm always here to to let that person talk and to, you know, give some healthy advice.
Well, Deborah, thanks so much for your service, and thanks for being guests on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Both very much appreciated.
Thank you so much for letting me come on.
I'd like to thank our guests for coming on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. The Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show is a nationally syndicated weekly radio show broadcast on numerous AM and FM radio stations across the country. We're always adding more affiliate stations. If you enjoyed the podcast version of the show, which is always free, please do me a favor and tell a friend or two or three. I'll be back in just a few days with another episode of the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast. Until then, this is John J. Wiley. See ya.